This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Race, religion, and passion are at the heart of Stuart Albright's debut novel set in the city of Durham. Sid Ellison is an African-American high school teacher in Appalachia. He returns to Durham when his brother is accused of murdering a Pakistani woman, and that woman is the sister of Sid's high school love. Stuart Albright drew on his experience as a teacher at Jordan High School in Durham when he wrote the novel. Bull City is his first work of fiction, and he joins us in the studio now. Welcome back, Stuart.
It's good to be here, Frank.
So fill us in. Give us a little bit more of the plot now in Bull City.
Okay. The book, it begins in Durham, and the middle section of it takes place in Boston. My main character, Sid Ellison, is from Boston originally, and he moves to Durham. So there's the book's in three parts, and the middle part is his background of leaving Boston and coming to Durham. And when he returns to Durham later on in life as a teacher, he reflects back on these years of living in Durham and how that experience of being uprooted from a place he knew very well in Boston and coming to Durham. He reflects on that while at the same time trying to come to terms with his brother who's on has been accused of murder, and a man who's been homeless and he's been estranged from for several years. So I guess you would classify this book as a literary thriller, but it's very much a character-driven book. It's about family. It's about your roots and what does it mean to be a Southerner? What does it mean to be someone from an outsider or someone who's an other? These are all issues that I try to tackle with this book.
And, of course, the woman his brother is accused of killing is the sister of his high school sweetheart.
Right, right. So the original idea for this, when I came about writing this book, it was I probably should have taken the safer route for my first novel. But I decided, as a white male, I should have four characters, only one of which is in fact white. One of the main characters is a Pakistani female, and that was something that was I knew very little about the Pakistani community in Durham. Although I've had several students who've been have gone through my classes before, and I've gotten to know fairly well. And they were a tremendous resource for me as I went about writing this book and learning about their culture, learning about the Quran. I'm a Christian, but I knew very little about Muslim culture, so it's something that I felt like I needed to immerse myself in as much as I possibly could. And that experience has kind of led to this main character of Malika.
In general, those were experiences. And in particular, you had two students in your class who had a kind of romance going on.
Right. And that was, I think, probably one of the main reasons why I decided to write this book. I'd had two students who were great students, phenomenal writers. One sat on one end of the room, one sat on the other. And I knew they were probably friends. Most of the students in my class knew each other fairly well. But it wasn't until after they left my class, the African-American male was Muslim and the female was a Hindu. I had no idea that they had been engaged in a year-long relationship that they had not told any of their classmates about. So you have a city where you have people from various cultures who decide to cross that bridge, that gap in race and ethnicity. But yet at the same time, there are still these traditional historical barriers to interracial relationships. And I thought that was fascinating.
And your meditation on that, certainly, the idea that you could keep anything like that, anything as strong as passion,
right,
such a secret. What is it doing to the individuals who are having to go through this experience?
Right. And I spent a good bit of time talking with this student about this experience. And she I felt very relieved when she emailed me the other day and said that she loved the book and that she felt like I got it right, because I was really worried about that, because I'm trying to capture. I mean, this is a fictional book, but it's fictional. To me, I always say that every story has the fabric of lots of truth. And this book is, while it's a piece of fiction, it's based on the fabric of truth that my students have told me, these amazing stories throughout the years. And I really wanted to do justice to them and to their legacy that they've left in my classes.
Can you read for us?
Sure. The excerpt I'm going to read is from the middle of the book, right as Sid has his older brother has been engaged in a shooting, and he knows that there's going to be a retaliation, and so he needs to leave Boston immediately. They need to pack up their bags and leave. So this is an excerpt from that moment.
Older brother's name is Ty.
Ty Ellison. Sid placed his duffel bag next to the front door and watched his brother pacing nervously around the den, cell phone to his ears. He had a money clip in his other hand full of $20 bills. "This should be enough to get us there," Ty said. "I already called Grandpa Cecil. He knows we're coming." The next 2 hours were a blur of activity, hauling luggage to a taxi and then to the Greyhound station, looking over their shoulder to make sure they weren't being followed, then waiting for the bus to pull out just after midnight. Ty and Vivian, that's his mother, slumped over in exhaustion as soon as the bus left the South Station Transit Center in Boston, but Sid couldn't sleep. He watched the familiar Boston skyline disappear as the bus rumbled down I-95. He wondered how someone could feel so connected to a place, only to see it vanish behind the exhaust fumes of a Greyhound bus. And what about his childhood? Was nothing in life ever permanent? He had a mother, a brother, and a duffel bag full of stuff. That was it. Sid held himself together until the bus reached the Connecticut line. That's when everything came undone. He felt his heart swell up, threatening to expose his greatest fears to every passenger on the bus. Sid was alone. He couldn't see anything on the horizon, not a damn thing to live for. He placed his jacket over his face and let the tears come at last. He cried quietly, but they were big, heavy tears that threatened to overwhelm his fragile hold on the world. "Please help me," Sid prayed into his jacket, too softly to wake his mother. "What am I going to do?" He prayed as if God was his only friend in the world. The words came from the darkest corner of his heart, lifted to the sky without knowing if anyone was up there to answer.
Bull City is the name of the novel. Stuart Albright, the author, his debut novel. He teaches at Jordan High School. It is a novel that is very much set in Durham, although, as you say, it takes place in a couple of places. But place is important to you, and the relationship to that place very important to this novel.
Right, right. This book is, in some ways, is a love song to Durham. It's also very much a book about me leaving Boston, where I went to grad school. I went to grad school at Harvard, and while I was up there, I taught in an inner city public high school in Boston, and there was there's one event that really kind of drove my heart back to wanting to come to North Carolina. When I went up to Boston, I was amazed by how many people told me that I was an idiot simply because of my Southern accent and how could you live in a place that so had such bigotry in the past, which is very much true.
Yeah, because there's no bigotry in Boston.
Oh, exactly. And that was amazed me. They had so many people that would say this to me, and then yet you had the horrible legacy of South Boston with integration. Right. But there was one event that happened up there that really, I think, was in addition to these my students who had this interracial relationship. The one event really kind of got me to write this book was I was teaching at this school and I was up in Boston right when 9/11 happened. And 2 months later, over the 2 months since 9/11, in the Boston subways, there have been a number of instances of passengers who'd been assaulted for simply because they weren't even necessarily Muslims people. They were just – they looked different. They were the other. And I thought that was kind of, interesting and sad, based on what I'd heard about Boston being an enlightened city. And then in the school where I taught, there was a large Somali immigrant population, and these students were seen as the other, very much so. And there's one event in November where a group of these students were almost beaten to death by an African-American gang. And I was fascinated by the fact that, this was a group of African-Americans who weren't considered to be African-American by a native-born African-American group. And in the days after that was just a tremendous tension and anger. And I thought, do we live in a post-racial America where this kind of thing really happens? So it really made me want to get back to North Carolina, where I feel like these are issues that people bring up. Durham is I think these issues are on the forefront, and it's messy, but people are willing to have a dialogue about it in ways that I didn't find in Boston.
Now, I want you to talk more about that, because it's something that actually I found to be true as well. Does it make a difference? Does it make a difference in a place like this where people will talk about these tensions? It doesn't go away. It doesn't mean that racism isn't here. It's not embedded in the very structure of our economic and political system here, but it doesn't make a difference at all that we talk about it here.
Right, and I guess that was part of what inspired me to want to write a book that I knew was I'm taking a risk. I'm a white male writing a book about people who in some ways are very much not like me. But I feel like I could take that risk because I've been so inspired by my students' willingness to ask these questions of each other, of people they didn't know very well who came from different backgrounds. And Jordan is a very interesting school. It's a very diverse population. And it's messy at times because of this diversity. But and my classes are I love the fact that with creative writing classes, I get to have a very broad group of students who in my class. My class size average is about 38. And when you have 38 kids from various backgrounds, you get some very interesting discussions. And it can be chaotic and crazy at times. But those discussions, I think, really, when students leave my class and they go off to college, they often say that the biggest thing they learned about being in the Durham Public Schools was how to get along with people who are not like them. And that really is the lesson that they say time and time again is the biggest thing they've really – and they've learned so much other stuff, obviously, but that really has guided them.
Well, one of the things they learn is creative writing from you. So talk about big risks. Now you write a book that they can read, and you're the creative writing teacher.
That's right. I've written two previous books, and they're both nonfiction. So tackling fiction was something that I knew was it was outside of my comfort zone. I teach two classes of novel writing students who are working on their own novel. So I thought it's a bit of – hypocrisy on my part if I'm not actually engaging in this process of trying to write a novel myself. And it's been really interesting for my students on the opposite side now, as they're reading my book and they're critiquing my own writing in some of the same ways that I critique them. And I love that. I mean, I think that I certainly can't say anything to refute that.
Yep. So what are they saying?
The biggest thing they've said was, I'm surprised you're actually you're that cool, Mr. Albright. You actually know about these kinds of things. I didn't think you did, you know, and that was kind of funny.
And that actually takes us to one of the things that any good writing teacher will teach, and that is write what you know.
Right.
And then
you
said right from the beginning, yeah, and here I go, taking this risk, writing about Muslims, writing about African Americans. I'm none of that. And yet, do you think that it is precisely your experience in the classroom as somebody who has been witness and intimately involved? You don't just watch these things as a teacher. You become emotionally, intellectually involved in these lives. That is, in a way, a kind of knowledge that you have access to and a right to write about.
Right. And for many of my students, after they write about their life experiences, which sometimes can be one day of writing, and that's all they've got to really debase it on, they really do need prodding outside of their own life. And I think some of the best writing comes when you have an intellectual curiosity outside of your own experiences. And that's something I really push my students. To really be a good writer, you need to know yourself, but you also need to understand the outside world. And they kind of, they're not mutually exclusive. You need to know both. And I really tried with this book to model that, to really immerse myself in a culture that I'm fascinated about, but also am deeply unfamiliar with.
Did you bring your students through the process of writing this book, show them drafts?
I did, particularly my Pakistani-American students. There's a good – I use some of the Urdu language, Pakistani native language, and I wanted to make sure I got that correct with the syntax, the slang. So I had a couple of students who kind of helped fact check that for me and make sure I'm getting this right. You know, if I have a Pakistani female student, would this be the type of thing that she would say to her mother? Would she be allowed to say this to her mother and get away with it? And that was extremely helpful. This book would not have been written if it wasn't for those students.
What about the press, McKinnon Press? What can you tell us about that?
McKinnon Press is a nonprofit that I started to initially for a memoir that I wrote back in 2005. And then that same year, I had a chance to teach my first creative writing class, and I thought it would be interesting to publish my own student works. And that was kind of, I did this as a whim, turned into a nonprofit. And since then, I've published 30 different anthologies over the past 6 or 7 years. I think about 15 or 20 student novels. And we have a website where people can go buy the books online. And this is just something, a way for me to get out the some of the amazing stuff that my students are doing. One of my poets, G. Yamazawa, who, Frank, I know you're
yeah.
familiar with, is
yeah.
a
sacrificial poet.
Right. He's a former student of mine who's now, really is an internationally known slam poet. We published his poetry collection. So I think if I had the time and the resources, I would love to make it a Durham-wide, publishing company. But it's just something that I've been able to use it for this book here as well.
What about you can tell us the website now, if you would.
Sure. McKinnonPress.com is the website for my students' work. Obviously, StuartAlbright.com is the website where my book is available in ebook and as a paperback.
You know, we talked about G, and we've talked about his story. You mentioned him. He's the poet. He's one of the ones who has been published by McKinnon.
Right.
And his story was remarkable because he's a guy who was out of school for a while, and writing brought him back.
Exactly. There's actually a character in this book, and G's familiar with this. I gave him the stamp of approval. There's a scene where a character named G. Sugimoto goes to a poetry slam at a fictional place in Durham, and this character is sort of like a somewhat of a major character, but not a major character in the book. But so I sent this to G, and when I wrote this, I had the character performing a slam piece, and I'm not great with slam poetry. So I asked him, I said, "Well, G, did I get this right?" And he's like, "Oh, this is great. This is me in a nutshell." And so that was really has been really fun to be able to. And he's probably the most true to a real student of mine. As the character in this book.
And he let the poem stand, the one that you wrote?
He let the poem stand. He didn't critique it. But I tell you, for somebody, it is tough to emulate an internationally well-known slam poet.
So this is your first foray into fiction. How much of it do you think was really driven by the fact that you felt you needed to do this as an example for your students? In other words, do you think you might have written this book if you hadn't been teaching and spreading the word that y'all ought to get out there and write?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, a big part of this, too, is I've been thinking about some big questions such as, do we live in a post-racial America? And we have an African-American president who in some ways defies many of the quote-unquote stereotypes what an African-American man you know, it is like. He has a white mother. And so do we live in a country that has gotten beyond race? And the incident in Boston showed me that very much we have not. And living in Durham, you know, it made me think, you know, Durham is a fascinating place, and I love this city, and I love all the interconnectedness of different groups and how people have these discussions and the messiness of that. And I don't think you get that in a lot of the South, and you certainly don't get it in the North, as I found from living in Boston. So I thought, well, how do I tackle a topic like this in nonfiction? Bull City just – it kind of came as the natural way of approaching it.
You got another novel perking inside?
Not another novel. I'm definitely working on a book about education, about teaching, and telling more of my students' stories. And because I've just got – I mean, I could write for years upon years and decades upon decades about all the inspiring work that my students have told me.
Well, and you've talked about earlier you said, look, it's important to talk from personal experience but also what's outside of yourself. And I think the writing process, doesn't it teach you about both of those things? So what you thought you knew about yourself, about the world outside you, changes, and you look at that first draft and you say, there was something I missed.
Right.
Big giant hole. It's helpful, isn't it, for students who, particularly kids who are having a hard time.
Exactly, and writing becomes a means of making sense of what could be a chaotic world, particularly for many of my students who really struggle with with poverty, with coming from families without a father. As a football coach at Jordan High School, I see that also. Many of our football players don't have fathers, and many of those kids take my writing class, and writing becomes a way for them to deal with, in some ways, this resentment or this anger.
Yeah, and recognizing those markers that are still very much branding our students and the rest of us
in
our so-called post-racial America.
Right.
Stuart, keep up the good work. Always a pleasure to talk
Thank
to you.
Thank you, Frank.
Stuart Albright, author of Bull City, his first work of fiction. You can learn more about it at stuartalbright.com. It's S-T-U-A-R-T. StuartAlbright.com. That's the state of things for today. Our website, you know, stateofthings.org. Our program's produced by Alex Granados and Sean Wen. Sarah Edwards, our intern. Al Wodarski is filling in for Robin Copley as the technical director today. Managing editor, Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.